Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining today's press conference on NOAA's 2019 Hurricane Season Outlook. Speaking today will be Wilbur Ross, Secretary of the Department of Commerce, Dr. Neil Jacobs, the Acting NOAA Administrator, and Dr. Daniel Kanuski, Deputy Administrator for Resilience at FEMA. After their formal remarks, our speakers will take questions from inside the hangar and from those on the phone, and they will be joined by Dr. Jerry Bell, NOAA's lead hurricane season forecaster. The outlook itself will be posted on NOAA.gov and will be distributed to those in the room as they are being delivered by Dr. Jacobs. I would like to introduce our speakers to the stage and Dr. Jacobs to the podium. Dr. Jacobs, I welcome you to the podium.
At this time, it's a distinct honor and pleasure to introduce the Secretary of Commerce, Mr. Wilbur Ross.
You can see how efficient NOAA is with their introductions and the rest of their activities. Thank you, Neil, for those words, and especially thank you for your leadership of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for NOAA's annual outlook on the 2019 hurricane season. The United States is fortunate to have such dedicated experts at NOAA's forecasting offices and at the National Hurricane Center, including the pilots and staff who fly the G4 Hurricane Hunter aircraft that you see here. NOAA's Hurricane Hunter aircraft were aloft for 580 hours last year. While they were on the ground, I've had the privilege of meeting many of these men and women. They are consummate professionals. They generate heaps of data used to determine a storm's intensity and direction. It's not just the center of a barometric low that is measured and analyzed, but the air for thousands of miles on all sides of it, including the shear above and the seas below. Our NOAA professionals work tirelessly to issue alerts to the public and emergency officials about the potential for hazardous weather. In fact, they work even harder during the off-season, preparing new products they will use the following season. They learn from every storm and apply that knowledge to future forecasts. I'm proud to note that their predictions are far more accurate than they have been in the past. NOAA has invested heavily in technology and in personnel. It has more powerful supercomputers, better software and algorithms, and more precise observational systems such as the microwave sounder. It has state-of-the-art GOES and polar orbiting satellites, and it has the trained people needed to operate these systems and interpret the hundreds of terabytes of data it generates every day. NOAA has improved the forecasting of hurricane tracks by 30% over the past decade. It has improved the lead time of its forecast by 3 days, meaning its 5-day in advance forecast now has the same accuracy as its former 2-day forecast. And its 7-day track now is what its 4-day track used to be. That's really important because advance warning saves lives and gives people a better chance to protect property. The system is even getting better. Starting in June, it will transition to a forecasting model with a new dynamic core, with the marvelous name of the finite volume on a cube sphere, or they call it FV3. It will be the first upgrade to the dynamic core of its global model since 1982. It will vastly improve the current version, which, if you can imagine, was originally written on the archaic punch code. For these successes, we owe everyone at NOAA a debt of gratitude. As a Florida resident, I'm acutely aware of the tremendous impact that hurricanes can have on lives, properties, and businesses. We just had an extremely busy hurricane season. As you may remember, at one point last year, four named storms were active simultaneously. Like Hamlet's slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, the storms that impacted the U.S. in 2018 caused $50 billion in damages. And we retired two notorious names, Michael and Florence. Bottom line with the 2019 outlook is really about being prepared as much as it is about the number of storms. With many strong tropical storms, especially those that persist and stall, the greatest destruction occurs beyond the coast. The impact of long-duration deluge is severe and life-threatening. We urge everyone who can be impacted by deep tropical depressions to stay informed and be ready to heed the warnings of NOAA and your emergency management community. Commerce Department stands ready to serve the nation before, during, and after any storm. So again, thank you for being here, and congratulations to NOAA for all of your worthy activities.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for joining us today and for your continued support of NOAA. The primary goal of today's outlook is to encourage the public to take steps to prepare before the hurricane season, which begins on June 1st. Preparing means reviewing and creating your emergency evacuation plans and gathering your supplies now in case your area is hit by a hurricane. We will hear more about preparedness from FEMA shortly. Before I announce the 2019 hurricane season outlook, I would like to discuss how NOAA is prepared to keep the public informed and safe this season. At NOAA, we strive to deliver timely and accurate forecasts supported by sophisticated weather models, which are fed incredible amounts of data from sources such as NOAA satellites, as well as dropsondes deployed from the Gulfstream 4 you see behind me. The King Air turboprop, which is over here, is vital to NOAA's post-hurricane response assistance. It's used to conduct low-altitude aerial surveys of coastline damage, helpful to emergency managers and homeowners who have evacuated. NOAA vessels and rapid response teams deploy after storms pass to survey waterways to ensure they are free of debris and safe for shipping. NOAA operates a fleet of Earth-observing satellites, including stationary GOES East and West, and advanced polar orbiting satellites, which provide vital microwave sounder data that drive our forecast models used to predict hurricane track and intensity. This season, the National Weather Service will upgrade the dynamic core to the GFS, known as the American model. This will mark the first revolutionary upgrade to the dynamic core in decades and represent the first step in reengineering NOAA's global forecast system to provide the best possible science-based predictions to the nation. And of course, there are NOAA's hurricane hunters. These planes collect data from above, around, and inside tropical systems. This season, the plane will collect higher resolution data from an upgraded onboard radar system. These enhanced observations will be transmitted to forecasters across NOAA and into our computer models, providing essential input to improve track and intensity forecasts. Collectively, NOAA's suite of sophisticated technologies and services enable decision makers and the public to take action before, during, and after hurricanes, increasing community resilience and helping build a more weather-ready nation. Now, on to the 2019 Atlantic hurricane season outlook. This includes all activity in the Atlantic Ocean, Gulf of Mexico, and Caribbean from June 1st to November 30th. Atmospheric and ocean conditions that factored into this outlook include competing signals. On one hand, the ongoing El Nino is expected to persist and suppress activity in the Atlantic hurricane season. On the other hand, a combination of warmer than average sea surface temperatures in the tropical Atlantic and Caribbean, combined with an enhanced West African monsoon, favor increased activity. Overall, the Atlantic hurricane season outlook calls for a near normal season with a 70% chance of 9 to 15 named storms with top winds at least 39 miles an hour. Of those, 4 to 8 will become hurricanes with top winds of at least 74 miles an hour, and 2 to 4 major hurricanes reaching category 3, 4, or 5. This outlook is made possible by the work of Dr. Jerry Bell, lead seasonal hurricane forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction System. His team, as well as him, are here today to answer any questions you may have about the outlook during the Q&A session. Please keep in mind that this outlook does not suggest how many of these storms strike land. That is beyond the forecast ability of the seasonal outlook, but when a storm does form, we can count on NOAA's National Weather Service, including the National Hurricane Center, to provide details on the storm track and potential impacts. Throughout the season, be sure to stay up to date at weather.gov and hurricanes.gov. Speaking of the Weather Service, I would like to acknowledge Dr. Louis Uccellini, Director of NOAA's National Weather Service, who is here today. In addition to his normal duties as the Weather Service Director, he is also campaigning to be the next president of the World Meteorological Organization. I wish him best of luck and my strongest endorsement as we are now a month away from the election in Geneva. Back to the hurricane outlook. To summarize, a near-normal Atlantic season is expected, with NOAA taking great strides to deliver the best forecast to keep you informed ahead of approaching storms. While we cannot prevent the storms, we can take action to be prepared for such severe weather and impacts on our communities. I would now like to invite FEMA's Dr. Daniel Kanuski to discuss what people can do this upcoming season.
Thank you, Dr. Jacobs. Thank you, the Secretary, as well. My message today, it only takes one. It only takes one landfalling hurricane to cause great destruction to a community. Thus, we need to prepare now. Now, of course, that includes our state and local and federal partners, but it also means you. It means you as individuals, families, as communities. You need to come together and take action now to protect yourselves, your property, and your financial future. Now, of course, there's a few easy steps to take here. Build a kit. Make sure the kit has food, water, medications for at least 72 hours to make sure that you can take care of yourselves and your families after disaster. Also realize you need to have a plan to communicate with your friends and family. Communications networks could be down following a disaster. You need to know your evacuation routes. You need to practice evacuating before the emergency. You also need to follow the advice of local officials. They know best about what you should be doing as a hurricane approaches. To receive those messages, you need to make sure you have a battery-powered radio, and you should also download the FEMA app. Finally, you need to be financially prepared. You need to make sure that you have cash on hand. ATMs, credit card swipe machines, those rely on electricity and communications networks, both of which could be down following a hurricane. You also need to have insurance. Your homeowner's insurance, make sure it's up to date. Speak to your local insurance agent. And make sure you have flood insurance. Flood insurance is not included in your homeowner's policy. You need to request it separately. Why must you have flood insurance? Let's look at Hurricane Harvey. 2017, Hurricane Harvey struck Texas. It caused mass devastation. We're all aware of that. But do you know what the financial impact was to individuals who were uninsured? The uninsured disaster survivor received about $3,000 from FEMA. And I'm proud that we put the $3,000 in the hands of disaster survivors immediately following that hurricane. But $3,000 isn't going to make you whole. Insurance makes you whole. The average payment for flood insurance following Hurricane Harvey was not $3,000, it was $117,000. So please go to floodsmart.gov, check out the insurance options today. Also, I encourage you to visit ready.gov for more information on everything I just discussed. Thank you very much.
Thank you to our speakers, and we will now have the Q&A portion of the program. I would like to welcome Dr. Jerry Bell to the stage to help address questions. And operator, please provide instructions to those dialing in on how they may get in the queue. We'll first start with questions in the hangar for any media. If you have any questions, please raise your hand and state your name and affiliation before you.
Thank you. We will begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. You'll be prompted to record your name. To withdraw your request, please press star 2. Again, if you do have a question, please press star 1.
What is this forecast? And given that you're talking about a pretty wide range of the potential number of storms, what's its value to the public?
We issue our ranges of activity, named storms, hurricanes, and major hurricanes, with a 70% likelihood. They're not the entire ranges of activity we've seen during past years with similar climate conditions and uncertainties for this year. But given that we issue the ranges with a 70% likelihood, that means we expect them to verify about 70% of the time, or about 7 in 10 seasons. And that's what we see. That those numbers really locked in 2008, 2009 period, and have been sustained since we started getting very sophisticated climate models like the Global Forecast System, Climate Forecast System from NOAA. We have now significant modeling efforts from the Geophysical Fluid Dynamics Lab at NOAA. So the bottom line is we verify each of those ranges. We expect to be accurate in 7 out of 10 seasons, and they are.
Hi there, Natalie Brand from CBS NewsPath. What did you learn from last season, and how does that inform your preparation for this season?
I think in terms of the preparation, I would actually go to hurricane, not from a meteorology perspective, but from a preparedness perspective. We really saw two completely different types or sets of impacts from Hurricanes Michael and Florence last year. Florence was approaching the Carolinas, it weakened, and then it stalled. So it produced record rainfall and massive flooding throughout the Carolinas. So in that case, flooding was the big issue, and the biggest impacts were not near the coast. They were much, much farther inland. Michael was a completely different scenario where it was a strengthening, very strong storm, became a Category 5 storm at landfall, and basically decimated everything in its path. In that case, there was relatively short time to evacuate or finalize your preparedness plans. So both of these different hurricanes really highlight the myriad types of impacts you can see with these hurricanes, and they point to, hey, the hurricanes impact different people in different ways, so I need to make sure my preparedness plans are in place for the ways myself, my family, my area could be impacted.
Hi, Katrina Pereira, CBS News.
NOAA recently addressed lawmakers about the FCC spectrum auction. What are the concerns about the potential effect on forecasting capabilities?
The concerns would be out-of-bounds emissions and interference with the passive microwave sounders, and I would just like to take this opportunity to state that NOAA is a huge supporter of 5G. We would be dependent on 5G for the dissemination of our watches and warnings to better inform the public, but we also want to protect our forecasting capabilities, and right now we're the subject matter experts. NOAA and NASA are working with the subject matter experts at the FCC to try to come to an optimal solution where we can have both 5G deployment as well as accurate forecasts.
Any other questions in the room? Brian?
Hey. Yeah, just had a quick question with the new FB3. I know, like, during the winter we were using it, there were a few issues with the FB3. We kind of held it back as far as winter forecasting, and now utilizing this for the hurricane modeling, are there any apprehension? We feel like we've worked out those kinks and bugs, and do you concurrently run the current system as well at the same time?
So we are continuing to run the GFS. We've been running the FB3 in quasi-production mode for a couple of years. There was two different bugs, one in the radiation and one in the snow depth accumulation. Those have been addressed. We've gone through retesting and verification, which is in the process right now. We have a date set mid-June to operationalize it, assuming we don't discover any more issues. But I'm confident that it's going to be more skillful than the current GFS. The back testing and verification process on previous storm seasons have proven that, so I'm very optimistic that we're going to have an upgraded forecast skill this year.
Hi, just Tom Frank again of E&E. Dr. Kaniski, question for you about FEMA. The 2018 report, the after-action report that FEMA released in 2018 on the 2017 hurricane, talked about, among other things, the problem FEMA had with having its staff dispersed at the beginning of the hurricane to so many other disasters. I think it said that 30% of the staff was attending to other disasters, and there was a conclusion about FEMA wanting to try to focus at least its personnel more on the catastrophic disasters and building up local ability to handle that. What is FEMA doing to that end for this hurricane season? And as it starts, how many people do you have out in the field at these other disasters?
So we do have over 50 open disasters right now. So there are disasters all over the country right now where FEMA personnel are staffing those. But as a lesson learned, as you correctly pointed out, from the 2017 hurricane season, we took at least two actions. One is making sure that we can rapidly redeploy those personnel to other disaster areas that may emerge with no notice. So not just hurricanes. If a disaster happened today, we are confident that we could redeploy personnel and resources as required. Two, as a result of the very busy 2017 and 2018 hurricane season, those personnel, they're now pre-deployed to those areas that would likely be impacted. So in other words, we have pre-positioned, quite unintentionally, our personnel to the Atlantic and Gulf coasts. So we have personnel that are there, that are nearby wherever, quite frankly, a hurricane might strike.
Operator, please remind the callers on the phone on how to get into the queue to ask a question. Any final questions in the room before we go to the phone? And we will come back to the room afterwards. But, operator, can you please send us the first question and provide the name and affiliation?
Thank you. Seth Borenstein, Associated Press, your line is open.
Yes, thank you. This is for Jerry. In terms of, well, first off, almost all the other private and CSU and all those are calling for more of a below normal season, so especially because of the El Nino. Can you explain a little more detail why you're more closer to normal than below normal, Is it more the warm seawaters, which is always the case, and is that climate change oriented, or is it the monsoon, more the West African monsoon, and can you explain how that would affect this? Thank you.
Sure. This year there are competing climate factors. There's a weak El Nino in place, and El Nino acts to increase the wind shear and suppress activity. Competing with El Nino is the ongoing patterns that we've seen since 1995 in association with the ongoing Atlantic high activity era, where the tropical Atlantic ocean temperatures are expected to be warmer than average, and with that, we're expecting a stronger West African monsoon. So that's warmer temperatures, stronger West African monsoon, they favor more activity. So it's, again, it's these competing factors. There's some uncertainty based on model predictions as to how strong each of those factors will be. Most models at this point are predicting a weak El Nino with limited impacts, and most models at this point are predicting warmer Atlantic temperatures, but not too warm. So it looks at this time that a near-normal season is most likely. But mind you, that's still a lot of activity. 9 to 15 named storms is a lot. 4 to 8 hurricanes is a lot. 2 to 4 major hurricanes is a lot. So the key message is we're expecting a near-normal season, but regardless, that's a lot of activity. You need to start getting prepared for the hurricane season now.
And the climate change factor?
I mentioned the main factors that are going into this season's outlook, the El Nino and the conditions over the tropical Atlantic. Just to hit this from major climate patterns, the El Nino-La Nina cycle is a major factor that influences hurricane activity from one year to the next. There's longer-term patterns for the Atlantic. The main one is called the Atlantic Multi-Decadal Oscillation, or AMO for people who know this word. This is a pattern that lasts anywhere from 25 to 40 years historically. And that pattern, since 1995, has been associated with warmer Atlantic temperatures, stronger West African monsoon, which has really been giving us the increased activity since 1995. There's no indication that we're out of this high activity era or this warm phase of the AMO. So those are really the two main climate factors for this year's hurricane outlook.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Tony Wood, Philadelphia Inquirer. Your line is now open.
Jerry Bell, Tony Wood in Philadelphia. You just addressed the question that I had, basically. So we are still in this active period that began in 95. Do you see any indication at all that the cycle is in any transition, or is this basically impossible to know? It's one of those things that you know you're out of it when you're out of it.
We're not seeing any indication that we're getting out of this high activity period yet. As far as predicting when it will end, there's no way to know. I mean, this cycle goes way back. We see it way back into the late 1800s when we started getting kind of decent ocean data to even be able to monitor these patterns. But no, there's no way to know.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Brian Sullivan, Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Jerry, the last 5 years, there's been a storm or two before the official start of the season. Is this any kind of long-term trend expected there?
Sorry, Brian. We can't hear you very clearly. That didn't help either. Brian? Operator, can we get the next question?
All right. Our next question comes from Josh Solomon, Tampa Bay. Your line is now open.
Dr. Bell, I've heard that the thermohaline circulation in the northern Atlantic is starting to turn down. What role does that play in the AMO cycle?
Let me back up for a little bit. There's what's called the Atlantic thermohaline circulation. It's a deep ocean circulation in the Atlantic basin. It's a clockwise rotation, and the changes in that circulation are associated with these multi-decadal changes in the Atlantic multi-decadal oscillation. So they're part and parcel of the same thing. The thermohaline circulation is the deep ocean part of this circulation. Various studies are indicating that may be changing, but what we've seen in the last, still through the last several seasons is the Atlantic Ocean temperatures are remaining warmer than average. The West African monsoon is remaining stronger than average. I mean, last year was a very strong West African monsoon and helped to really strengthen last year's season. So no, we're not out of this high activity era yet.
Operator, next question, please.
Our next question comes from Stephanie Tao, Standard & Poor's Global. Your line is open.
Hi, Jerry. This is Stephanie. Just wanted to, I don't know if you have anything more to say here, but did your modeling show you any changes in the level of rainfall of these hurricanes? Because it does depend on how they make landfall and whether they stall like Florence, but we have been seeing a lot of rain and flooding, so I just wanted to check there.
No, I'm mainly looking at the models as far as predicting the strength of the hurricane season. So I'm not sure how to really answer that question.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Mary Landers, the Savannah Morning News. Your line is open.
Well, thank you. I'm wondering if the named storm that we already had is included in that 9 to 15 range.
Yes, it is. The numbers we give are for the entire hurricane season.
And I think what the caller who got cut off was asking was, are you seeing any pattern in preseason activity?
No, the preseason or early season, meaning June, July activity, is typically minimal. On average, you might see one or two named storms during June and July. You might see a hurricane. Very rarely would you see a major hurricane during June and July. By far, the peak of the hurricane season is August, September, and October. That's when most of the major hurricanes and hurricanes form. Back to the early part of the season, if we do get a storm like we have preseason storm or some of these that do form in June, July, typically they form from a trailing frontal boundary or an upper-level depression in the jet stream. They tend to be short-lived, and that's it, as we just saw. Now, in contrast, during the peak months of the hurricane season, those are the systems that come from cloud systems moving westward from Africa. Those are the storms that very often can strengthen into hurricanes, major hurricanes, and really control the overall hurricane season. So the bottom line is that early season activity is typically not a signal of what to expect for the rest of the hurricane season.
Thanks.
Thank you again for all the questions on the phone. Are there any other questions in the room? Okay, with that, we'll conclude this press conference. If you have any follow-up inquiries, please contact Lauren Gaitis at 202-740-8314. I thank you, speakers, again, for joining today, and thank you all for joining. Thanks.